welcome to The Medley. I'm your host, Blake Crash Priddle, and this week I am proud to have Derek Ritchell as this week's guest. Derek Ritchell is a Canadian stage actor, director, and playwright, and is also the artistic director of the Lighthouse Festival Theatre in Port Dover, Ontario. He is perhaps best known to Canadian 90s kids for playing the role of Ray in the Canadian version of Sesame Street called Sesame Park. He's going to tell the story about how he landed that iconic role and what inspired him to pursue a career in the theater industry. And like many of our guests, he has some really good advice for people that might want to follow his footsteps. First off, it's good to have you on the medley this week.
I'm thrilled. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Well, I do too. Let's start from the beginning. Where did your passion for theater start?
It would have started actually really late. It started in high school, actually. I started doing some drama classes as an old skateboarder would do just to get some credits. And I had a drama teacher who recognized. She said, "Oh, no, I think you should, direct the school play." And I was like, okay, sounds great. So I did that, and then that was near the end of my high school career. I always thought I was just going to go work in a factory like all my friends and things like that. But the play thing was fun, and it was successful, and everyone was thrilled, and I spoke to the guidance counselor back then. Was like, "Well, what do you want to do with your life?" I didn't really have much of an answer, and she said, "Well, why don't you audition for theater school? You seem to be suited to it." And I thought, "Oh, okay, well, I guess I'll audition for one, and if that goes well, then I guess that's what I'm supposed to do." And then I got into theater school, so my passion for theater was really late blooming. It would have been, right near the end of high school.
What theater school did you go to?
I went to Theatre Humber.
That's in Toronto, right?
Yeah, at the time it was on the Queensway in Etobicoke.
I've heard some good things about it. I hear that it's a really good program.
It sure was the right program for me at the time. This is like early 1990s when I was there. And it was in this old school that used to be, I had the boys' entrance and the girls' entrance on the Queensway. And it had ceased to be a public school, and it had gone through a few different incarnations. And then it ended up being part of Humber College's stable of buildings, and they put the theater folk there. And when I was there, it was really free, and you were really able to find your own style. The teachers were eclectic and had different views of different things, so you were always pulling different things from different people and kind of creating your own way, which I really liked. It wasn't like, "Oh, you have to do it this way." There was some variety, and you could create your own craft.
So the theater program would have covered not only acting, but it would have also covered things like writing and other behind-the-scenes work too, eh?
Well, you know what? It didn't cover any writing or directing or anything. It was when I went, we did the performance side of it, and we had a few classes where we learned about the technical side, but really not much at all. It was really, at that time, really focused on performance. We were constantly doing scenes and plays, and we were always in rehearsals. It was much more focused on performance when I was there.
That's what I like best about theater myself, performance, because I've been in some community plays myself, and I hope to take it up again one of these days. Because being in journalism and being in theater, it's very similar. You're always performing.
Oh, for sure. Dennis, he has the morning show in Niagara, and he directs plays all the time. He's very involved in the community theater down in Niagara. And there's plenty of people from the radio world that are involved in the theater, even here in Norfolk. That's very prominent. Makes total sense to me.
What were some of the early plays that you were in when you just started your theater career?
I did Waiting for Godot, believe it or not. I played go-go. So I must have been, oh, I don't know, I was 21 and you're playing go-go in a theater down on Spadina Avenue, downtown Toronto. And, you know, maybe your audience is like 8 people because no one knows who you are. And that was one of the first. And then Glengarry, Glen Ross. I'm known for comedy, Canadian comedy. That's kind of what I'm known for. But it's surprisingly, when I came out of theater school, it was all like The Crack Walker by Judith Thompson. You know, it was all really intense kind of dramas I was doing. So how I got wrapped up into the comedy world, it didn't start like that, that's for sure.
One thing that actors sometimes go through on stage is something happens on stage that wasn't supposed to happen and they have to work their way around that. Did anything like that ever happen to you in your earlier days or even in recent years?
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. I'll never forget one. We were doing Outlaw, which is a Western by Norm Foster. And I was fortunate enough to be in it with Norm playing one of the title characters. And so the sequence is me up on a rock with a noose around my neck. And over the course of 20, 30 pages, you know, I convince him to let me take the noose off my neck. And then my character convinces him to let me down from off the rock so I can sit down. But this one night, I don't know what happened. To this day, I have no idea, but I remember I took off the noose and I stepped down off the rock and I started to cross to my next piece, where I'm supposed to go and sit. And I remember Norm watching me cross the stage with this look on his face. He just looked like, what is going on? And then I said my next line, and then I saw Norm sort of, you know, take it in and then go, okay. And then boom, off he went. And then we finished the act and we went into the dressing room and, you know, I said, oh, that was a pretty good act. You know, it's a pretty good audience. And he went, yeah. I guess you didn't like those 15 pages I wrote, huh? And I had no idea that when I took the noose off, there was still like 15 pages before I'm supposed to step down from the rock, but I just skipped all of it. I just took the noose off, got down, went over, and on we went. So I remember being mortified, not only because, you know, you skip 15 pages, but it's the playwright that you skipped it right in front of, on stage, in front of an audience. I was mortified.
Well, the reason that I asked is because I was in a community play when I was 18, and it was in a play called The Seussification of Romeo and Juliet. It was like a Dr. Seuss version of Romeo and Juliet, and this happened when we were all taking a bow. I was wearing a pair of slippers, so I stepped at the edge of the stage, and I slipped, and I fell down, and right onto the floor, and everybody started laughing, and I just had to play along and say, I'm okay.
At least you didn't go into the audience, though.
Well, I literally fell like right off the stage, but you're right. No, I didn't go into the audience.
Like every show we produce at Lighthouse, I mean, I've got to be up to 70 shows produced at Lighthouse now in my tenure. And I think every single show during some point of their run, something's happened. It's part of live theater, which is part of the fun, I think.
Oh, I concur. And I remember explaining to my director that was not intentional, I swear to God. And she says, don't worry, Blake. The important thing is that you're okay.
Well, that's true, because you got another show to...
That's right. She always used to tell us, if you make a mistake, make a big one. In other words, just keep going.
Yeah. No, just own it.
Exactly. The only time something goes wrong is if you tell people that it went wrong.
That's it, exactly. So, you know what? Deny.
You've been in a lot of theater, but you have had a couple of on-screen roles as well. What was your first on-screen role?
That would have been right out of theater school. I think I was out of theater school only a couple of weeks before I stepped on set to a movie, a sci-fi movie. I wouldn't even call it a B-movie, a sci-fi movie called The Deadly Wake. But man, incredible people involved, and you know, coming out of theater school and walking right onto a film set was pretty thrilling.
Another role that you had was the role of Ray in Sesame Park. It was one of a few human characters that appeared on the show regularly. How did you get that role?
I was fortunate enough to get representation and agent right out of theater school. At that time, you know, you go out to 3 or 4 auditions a week. It was much different then than it is now. sometimes I hear people it takes 3 or 4 auditions a month, but back then we were always going out. And one of them came across the desk, and they thought, oh, Derek might be good for this, Sesame Park at CBC. So they sent me in, and I remember they said, you know, can you sing? And I said, oh, sure. And that was a lie. And I went into the audition with the guitar, and they were like, okay, you know, play a little for us. And I did a little thing. I sang maybe 3 lines of a song, the only 3 lines I pretty much knew of the song. And they came out okay. And, you know, they hired me. Thankfully, they never once, and I can't remember how many seasons we did, but never once did they make me sing. So I was thrilled.
A little while ago, you said that you are known for your comedy. It's certainly your character, Ray, was known for his comedy on Sesame Park as well. A lot of funny things happened to him. I remember there was an episode he was trying to fix a jack-in-the-box, and every time it popped up, it kept hitting Ray in the nose. Do you remember that?
I do remember that, yeah. And I remember getting things dumped on me a lot. Water, things like that. Ray was a bit of a sad, soppy character that, you know, everyone got to have a lot of fun with. Those puppeteers, man, are they talented people. Unbelievable. And that was, I was only a little while out of theater school then when I got that gig too. And they were just so terrific to work with, you know. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no clue how to work with puppets, but they were very patient.
Before we started recording, I actually watched a clip on YouTube. It was one where you were interacting with Katie, or Katie was pretending to be Super Katie, and she was a Muppet in a wheelchair. And I really like diversity in media, especially the representation of people with disabilities, or in this case, you know, it was a puppet character, but still, I really like that kind of representation.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't say we were ahead of our time. I think we were just reflecting our time. But Katie was an amazing character. And a lot of people connected to the characters. Dodie, you know, there was a, you know, she was a great motherly figured character. Of course, Basil. Everyone loved Basil, yeah.
Another funny Ray moment that I remember as a kid watching Sesame Park was when you and the puppets did a show all about weather. I guess it was like a stage show or something, and you were dressed in your rain gear, and then at the end of the show, you took it off and went outside, and then it started raining, and you're like, oh, I can't believe it.
Yeah, more water. Dump as much water on Derek as you can.
Well, it certainly made me laugh growing up sick in the early 2000s in Northern Ontario, watching CBC all day, and during the summer, too.
I don't think I understood the scale of Sesame Park when I was doing it. To me, it was just, you know, a kid trying to do a good job at the CBC of this show, and hopefully they would have me back. So, you know, but I don't think at the time I recognized the scale of a show going across the country, top to bottom and side to side. I didn't have an appreciation for what that is. So when I hear someone like you talk about Sesame Park, I'm always reminded of the reach of those messages in that show. So, you know, it's always nice to be reminded of that.
Well, Sesame Park did a really good job teaching kids about Canadian culture, you know, teaching them basic French and some of the history about Canada. And they occasionally had some guests that were associated with Canadian pop culture, like Red Green. Do you remember that?
I do. Yeah, that's a big deal, Graham. that's a Canadian icon.
Do you have any funny or memorable behind-the-scenes stories from the set of Sesame Park that you'd like to share?
Let me put it this way. The puppeteers were very, 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 very funny when the cameras weren't rolling, if you catch my drift. Those puppeteers, some of the things that they could come out with when the cameras weren't rolling was extremely funny. That's what I remember most, is when they would say cut, and then the puppets would just keep going ad-libbing. And I just remember being in stitches. I couldn't stop laughing at how great they were. Most of it I can't say on your podcast, so but you have to take my word. But everything that made me howl was when the cameras weren't rolling.
So after Sesame Park, you got involved with Lighthouse Festival Theater in Port Dover. How did that job come about?
Again, that was just another audition packed in with a ton of other auditions, and it just happened to be the one that landed. I remember I was doing a lot of TV film at that time earlier in my career because, you know, there's more money involved in TV and film, and theater is a little less money, so you don't do as much of it. I remember I was really interested in going back to the stage. It had been a while since I had been to the stage, maybe 6-7 years, and I thought, well, you know, I've been doing a lot of TV film, I kind of want to try going back to the stage. So I asked my agent to see if there were any auditions out there, and she said, yeah, there's this one, what do you think? And I said, well, let's give it a whirl. I auditioned for Tyra Harper, who is an immense talent, and we sort of clicked with the show. It was called Heat Wave, and that was in 2002, I think. Yeah, I went out to this town, Port Dover. I never even heard of it, but it's only an hour and a half away from Toronto, but it's like going to the Muskokas. It's beautiful, the lake, and there's wineries and camping, and then there's this beautiful little town, Port Dover, with this theater that just extremely vibrant and very, very well supported by its community and from people outside the community. And I was fortunate enough to do Heat Wave there. Then they just kept asking me back every year to do different shows. And then I wrote a show and they put it on, and that was a success. And then they said, well, how about you want to direct? And I said, yeah, I'd love to direct. And then near the, 2010, I applied for a grant to be an artistic associate, to learn how to run a theater from the artistic director's side of things. And I was fortunate enough through Canada Council to get that grant. And so I was there for a year, and then AD at the time was stepping down, and they asked me if I wanted to interview. And I said, well, you know, that'd be a good experience. Clearly you're not going to hire me. I'm too young. I've only been here a year learning the AD job. And then, a bunch of really long interviews later, they called me up and said, we want you to take the gig. And I was thrilled, excited, terrified, all the things, you know, self-doubt, self-confidence, you know, it was just a whirlwind of emotion. I signed on, and I've been there ever since. So it's been a 22-year relationship with Port Dover at Lighthouse with me. So it's now part of me.
I read your bio, and I heard that you wrote a few plays, including one that's set during the Prohibition era. Where did the inspiration for those plays come from?
Dover. Where the theater is, Port Dover, because Port Dover was the end of the Grand Trunk Railroad. So a lot of the Old Crow and the whiskey and all that sort of ended up in Dover. And then where the train cars were unloaded was right by the pier. And there was a huge fishing community, in Port Dover, and they were able to modify, these boats, and they called them Grey Ghosts. And what they did is they took Liberty aircraft engines from World War One. They took the aircraft engines that were no longer being used as fighter planes, and they dropped them into the boats so that they could scream across the lake, Lake Erie, really quickly with all of the booze. So there's a ton of history of booze being run out of Port Dover over to the States. So, I just thought that was so exciting, you know, I want to know about this. So I just started asking a lot of questions just out of curiosity. And then I thought, wow, I think this is a musical, a play. So I called up my friend Steve Thomas, who's a terrific musical director. He works a lot out of Drayton. We started writing a show about this team of misfits running booze across the lake. Rum Runners, the musical.
There are a lot of aspiring playwrights out there that may not understand the process of getting their scripts published or noticed by theater companies. Could you maybe explain the process?
Well, the key is to write, first of all. Just write, you know, and don't write to be produced. Write because you love it and you have a story to tell. The producing stuff comes later, right? Just write. And it doesn't matter if it's good or bad, just at least write 3 pages a day and just get that story out. And then if there is a story that is to be told, you want to find the theaters that would want to tell that story, right? So clearly, the Rum Runners, the musical, is very specific to Port Dover. However, you know, people who want to learn history about rum running, you could do that play anywhere. But the place to get the play initially played would be a theater on Lake Erie, of course, that has a connection to it. If you have an amazing play about a terrific rural character, you know, had a huge story to tell when it came to agriculture or something, you would go to Blythe Festival Theater because, you know, those are the kind of stories they want to tell. So once you've written your story, know who would want to tell that story initially. And then once it's been told once, other theaters will go, oh, that's a fantastic show. And then other theaters start to pick up on it. But the best way is to figure out which theaters, and it could be, there will be multiple theaters, but which theaters would be inclined to connect your story with their audience.
Well, I hope to see Rum Runners one of these days, and that's because I wrote a very similar story that's set during the Prohibition era, just a short story, but I think it would be very similar to Rum Runners. How can people keep up to date with you, or where would they go if they're interested in putting on one of your plays? Because here in Nova Scotia, we have a huge theater scene, and I just know that they would be interested in putting on one of your shows.
Well, you know, because I'm so focused as the AD of Lighthouse, I do have a website, DerekRitchell.com, www.DerekRitchell.com. They can download my scripts from there. But I haven't really paid attention to that website in quite a while. I should. I absolutely should. But my job at Lighthouse just keeps me very, very focused because it's such a going concern. But if people do feel inclined that they want to tell one of my stories, they're more than welcome to message me at Lighthouse. And it's easy. It's just Derek@LighthouseTheater.com.
The Humber College course that you took focused mainly on performance. Did you take any courses to learn how to become a successful playwright or take private lessons from someone, or how did that come about?
You know what? I didn't. I just kind of kept writing bad things until there were enough good things to make a play. That's the thing, that one of the things that I learned about writing and directing and acting is try everything, right? Like, and 99% of what we do, you're not going to use on the stage. You're just not. But at least you tried. And I often say, to get to a good idea, let's go through three or four bad ones. And then all of a sudden, the great idea presents itself. And it's like, there it is. I think artists sometimes get worried about looking foolish or failing. Whereas I came from the theater training of let's do everything so that we know what not to do on the night we perform. You know, like, it's okay to be terrible. It's okay to try different things and then to be wrong and bad. No one's going to judge us on that in the rehearsal hall or on the page when I'm writing. I've always subscribed to that try everything and totally be okay with most of it not being great. But eventually you're going to find greatness in there, and those moments make it all worthwhile.
Well, I had a lot of fun talking with you this week, Derek. It was great to have you on the show, and your time is hugely appreciated.
No. You're very generous. So thank you. Thanks for reaching out. I'm thrilled that Sesame Park, you know, triggered you to find me. It's been a long time, since 30 years, I guess, we're getting close to with Sesame Park. So I'm thrilled that it's still, you know, means something to someone. We were very proud of it when we did it. So that's really terrific. Thank you.
Anytime. And that was Canadian stage actor, playwright, director, and artistic director, Derek Ritchell. I hope that you enjoyed this edition of The Medley. And remember, here at The Medley, we're all kinds of different.